My friend Ben Jerome pinged me and said, hey, dude, get on this Clubhouse thing and check it out. It's great. It's amazing. It's really led to a lot of good connections. And I was like, all right, man, I guess I'll jump on there. So I did, and we talked a little bit about what it's about and what that looks like, and started brainstorming. I was like, huh, this is pretty fascinating. Why not try it out? So I decided hop on here and meet people and on the spot, on demand, record a podcast that same day and get it produced immediately and have it up and running within 48 hours on Spotify, on Apple, on Google to share with your friends and family. So that's what this is all about. You are the star. Summer, welcome to the show. Today, you are the star. Summer, what's up?
Awesome. Thanks, Phil, for having me.
Yes, ma'am. So let's start off. Tell all your raving fans out there, how did we meet originally?
Yeah, so we met on the Clubhouse app. There's a phenomenal Clubhouse group called Own Your Grind. And we're just in there becoming bigger, better versions of ourselves.
Yes. And for those of us out there who don't know what Clubhouse, which by the way, Brian, my friend, whom I play basketball with, harassed me because he listened to one of the shows and says, what is a Clubhouse? So what do you tell to those of the people out there that don't know?
It is the ultimate networking. It really kind of takes away the facade that you get when you're behind a Facebook screen, you know, a Facebook page or a Twitter page. And it really kind of exposes you in a more genuine way. And you're able to make connections with people you otherwise would not have access to globally. Truly, people in every country participate on Clubhouse.
Yes. So, and what do you say to maybe the haters out there that are like, it sounds lame, just another Facebook or whatever, like we've got enough of that and it's drama and terrible. What is the difference in Clubhouse where it's maybe more positive?
I don't know, Phil. Do you secretly work for Clubhouse?
So it kind of seems like I do, but honestly, literally, I've been on here like 5 times and it took some convincing to me, to be honest. Like I was like, because Ben was like, dude, get on here. It's awesome. Like I'm making great connections. And I'm like, I don't know about all this, dude. So it was more, I'll say this, you're speaking to my skeptic within me and convincing me more of, hey man, it's not as bad as the toxic social media. Is there anything that stands out to you of how it's different?
Well, there is for a couple of things. So I'm very active during the day. Like I do a lot of driving, for example. So being able to have an audio connection is really great. And the room topics are so different. I mean, you can learn about cybersecurity. You can learn about growing your business. You can learn about mental health, growing yourself, planting, how to have a podcast and perfect the sound checking. I mean, just anything you can think of, there is a group for. And within that group, the top experts in their field sometimes are there. And then sometimes it's just more casual people wanting to have a conversation, but you get a chance. No matter who you are, what level you're at, you get a chance to speak and engage if you want to, but you don't have to. You can certainly just come and listen.
I dig it. So speaking of experts, it sounds like you are an expert on the famous story called the Puerto Rican Ghetto, and I would like you to share that with us today.
Wow. Totally unexpected. I will do that. So one of my good girlfriends, her name's Kat, we took a trip to Puerto Rico and, she is from New York City. So she has actually never had to drive in her entire life,
okay.
But she really didn't want me to have to carry the burden of driving us throughout Puerto Rico in a rental car. So she said, no, I'm going to go get my license. It'll be fine. So she goes to get her license. We go to Puerto Rico, we rent the car. I do my driving. She does her driving and we're going to this rainforest that's several, you know, probably 2 hours from where we were staying. And we have to go through kind of the heart of the Puerto Rican ghetto to get there. And so she's driving and I kid you not, she's going 7 miles an hour, if that. And I'm like, oh, Kat, look, there's a horse. There's this horse in the middle of this ghetto road. So she gets distracted by the horse and drives straight into a car of a mom with kids.
Uh-oh.
So mind you, none of us, we don't speak their language.
Right.
We are in a very dangerous place.
Right.
And we have officially wrecked a car.
Yikes.
But luckily, we were in front of a convenience store, kind of a souvenir store. And the sweet lady came and she's like, you come in here right now. And she kept us safe because actually there, it's not like in the US where I'm from, where you can just exchange information, especially when it's with a rental car, the police have to come and take all the information. Uh-huh. And we had to wait a solid 5 hours before they came to check out the scene. It's not a priority at all.
They're like, we'll get to you when we do. In the meantime, buy a souvenir and drink a Coke.
And you know what? We gladly did. And we lived to see another day.
Well, congrats on surviving that you didn't get harmed. Now, did you make it to the rainforest? I got to imagine that changed the plans.
It did not. We made it very, very behind schedule, but we did make it and it was as beautiful as expected.
That's fabulous. So I was also in Puerto Rico, I want to say 2018. What's the capital? San Juan?
Yeah. Oh, that's where we stayed.
Yep. So we got down the old town. We ate some mofongo. Did you get down on that?
Yes, that's all I ate. And now that I'm back home, it's just all I think about.
Yes. It's hard to find mofongo restaurants. We went to D.C. In February, and we're like, no matter what, we're going to find a Puerto Rican restaurant. And we did. And it was delicious. Nothing like, you know, there in the OG. I call it the motherland. Nothing like the motherland. But it was still, it scratched the itch a little bit. Welcome, Goddess, to our room here. We are recording a podcast starring Summer, and she's telling the story of the Puerto Rican ghetto, and that's what's up. So speaking of foods, tell me about the potato sampler that we were brainstorming about.
Yeah, you know, I feel like if I were to describe the essence of my palate, it would be as refined as the average potato. Uh-huh. And really, the most amazing dish that I could really think of is a potato sampler. You get a little mashed potato, you get a little hash brown, you get some French fry, you get a baked potato, you get a double baked potato, and yes. You really just get the best of all worlds.
I'm digging it. What about tater tots?
Tater tots, you know, we could throw some in. I tend to say that on the potato scale, they're kind of at the bottom, but okay. You know, I won't discriminate.
They are the fodder of the potato sampler is what I'm hearing.
that is true. That is true.
Got it. Okay. Now with the hash browns, are they going to be crispy or just like regular?
Oh no, they're crispy.
Crispy.
They got that extra grease on them to make them extra fattening and delicious.
I'm down. And then what about like ketchup, salsa? What's going to be put on those?
You have to choose. I mean, I almost think you need a sauce sampler to accompany your potato sampler.
Got it. So then you can dip and then each bite could be different.
Absolutely.
I like the creativity here. Mashed potatoes. Are we putting gravy on this?
No, oh no. Don't ruin a good potato.
Gravy
no, no, no.
Free. What about butter?
Oh, absolutely. Of course. That is the essence of a potato.
Butter makes the world go round. I like the thought there. And then everything else, that's pretty straightforward, the other taters. Now, with the baked potatoes, we get like bacon bits and like chives on that? Is that how?
Absolutely. But really, you can do anything. Sometimes I'll make like spaghetti sauce, you know, with the meat and the sauce, and I'll put it on the baked potato. I'll do tiki masala on top of it, or like any kind, different types of soup, like broccoli and cheese. Just, oh, amazing.
I'm digging it. All right. Well, my mouth is watering. And when we're having this potato sampler, we've got to protect it from the dogs. And if you can tell us about the doggies that get to live under your roof, what are they like?
Yeah. So Ace and Ziva would gladly participate in the potato sampler. And honestly, they usually get to eat what we eat. So Ace, he is a complete mutt. And, as I was describing to you earlier, friends and family describe them as my paint-by-number dogs because they're just very colorful. Uh-huh. So Ace is black and white, but he looks like one of those big cows you would just see like on a dairy farm with those black and white markings. And then Ziva, she's just a really cool Australian shepherd who likes to bark.
Word. So we got to protect that from there. And they sound like a fun crew to hang out with. I've also have a couple of dogs. I've got a yellow lab, Storm, and then a black shepherd, Ahava. And she is absolutely insane and will get in everyone's face and just lick them until they are driven crazy. So that's what
I mean. With such an epic name, I can see it, how that corresponds to that behavior.
Yeah. Do you know the meaning of Ahava?
I don't know the meaning of Ahava, to be honest. It just sounded like a very powerful name, and the dog would have a lot of personality if they had that name.
Yes, yes, thank you. So actually, as we were talking about Hebrew, because we were saying, Ziva sounds kind of Hebrewish, and kind of like the CSI, is there an actor named that? Is that what we're saying?
No. So it's NCIS. It's the kind of like CSI, except it's the naval version. So it's only like crimes on naval bases.
Yep.
And it was Ziva David. Yeah, she's no longer on the show, but she's pretty epic.
Got it. I got my show acronyms messed up. But we're on the theme of Hebrew. Ahava in Hebrew means love. So I think that's a pretty powerful concept. And
well, that explains why she looks so much. She's just showing me her love.
There you go. She's loving everybody. So sticking with the Hebrew theme, one of the great books that you've read that stands out to you, you mentioned, was The Tattooist of Auschwitz. And tell us a little bit about that book, if anyone would be interested in reading that. How did that affect you?
You know, I think most listeners would. It is a bestseller. You know, for me, it really just kind of helps me kind of recenter, because it is such a powerful story of just true trauma and heartbreak and injustice. So the idea is the main character, he is actually the person. So if you're coming to Auschwitz as a prisoner, he would be the person that would tattoo your number on you. And so it follows him through his entire stay at Auschwitz. And several times he literally almost met death. And it just goes through how he overcame all those chances through luck and wit, how he met, you know, a woman who was also at Auschwitz, and how by some miracle they both survived and ended up getting married afterwards.
Awesome. And you said it was a tearjerker.
Oh my gosh. The stuff that they had to go through and see and witness is just, yeah, it's definitely not for the faint of heart.
Yeah. And then I also, when you were mentioning that book, it stood out to me, Viktor Frankl's book, The Meaning of Man's Search for Meaning, I believe is what it's called.
Yes, that's it. Yep.
And it's similar. So when we read books like that, or we ponder that kind of those kinds of concepts, doesn't it put our troubles to pale in comparison when you really put it in perspective?
That's an interesting question. I actually had a client from Israel not too long ago, and I was, you know, we've become friends over time, and I was kind of opening up to him, saying, you know, I have these first world problems that feel so real to me, but when I read stuff like this, how can I even be so selfish as to be upset over these things that are non-problems in a bigger, you know, bigger perspective. And what he said to me really resonated. He's like, yes, people have it worse than you, but that doesn't minimize your feelings. Your feelings still matter, and it's very real to you and your experience.
Yeah.
So I, you know, these books are very helpful, understanding history and understanding just the level humanity can go to. Mm-hmm. But it definitely doesn't mean that you should not be able to feel your emotions, and you shouldn't feel guilty for feeling emotions over things that may feel very minor to others.
Yes. I know. I love that you said that. That's true. Again, I think I heard Tim Ferriss mention this, and basically regardless of what you are facing, that's the biggest thing that you're facing, that the trauma, the difficulty, the frustration, the sadness, whatever it is. And we should still validate that for ourselves and say, I feel sad, I feel crappy, whatever. And even if it's this, what seemingly is insignificant to someone else, or it's not, you know, life ending or world changing, or, you know, I'm not starving on the street, but nevertheless, it still feels painful. And I still need some level of empathy, sympathy, love, and care to not only for myself, but also people supporting me to validate that. Is that supporting what you're saying there?
100%, yes.
Awesome. I appreciate you sharing that. So speaking of meaningful thoughts, as that was, and I appreciate that, what did your grandpa call you? What was your nickname?
So growing up, my grandpa would always call me Moon, M-O-O-N. And I don't know, it was just so charming, and it made me feel so special. And then it, unfortunately, he passed away about 3 years ago. But while he was alive, I really never thought to ask, why do you call me that? And my grandmother had also passed away prior to him. So I had asked my dad recently, and he said, well, it's because your grandma would always say, I love you to the moon and back. And that was just too long for my grandpa to say. So he just went with Moon.
Yes, I dig it. So I got to imagine that made you feel a little special.
You know, it kind of did. Got all warm and fuzzy. Yeah. Yes,
as it should. When you told me that story, I was like, yes, I love it. I dig it. And then your other nickname, Sumtuck. That's,
you know, yeah, it's pretty straightforward. Yeah.
Straightforward. Summer, Tucker, going to Sumtuck, right?
That's me, yeah.
Cool. All right. And then, so we met on Clubhouse. And tell me what your experience has been like with that. Ultimately, what you said is you wanted to engage kind of outside of your normal network, and what's that led to you? I know you touched a little bit on that. Do you have anything else to add to that?
You know, it's been, I would say, yeah, it's been a multitude of experiences. I think one, just the value that you can get from a knowledge perspective. Again, people that you would never have access to or would potentially have to pay to have access to, you get to hear speak for free. You get to ask them personal questions or professional questions for free. So the takeaways of how could I improve my business? How can I improve personally? That just gold, pure gold in so many rooms. And on the flip side of that, it truly is the connections. I mean, there are several people that I've helped improve their user experience on, like a website or an app, or help just refine some content. And I did that, you know, free charge just to kind of get some momentum going for them. And on the flip side, I've had several people on Clubhouse connect with me and offer to help me on some of the different pain points I have with my business. So it's been just really valuable in that kind of give and take, and really getting to expand those relationships.
Awesome. And so you mentioned user experience, and that's probably like a magic word in your realm. As we were talking a little bit, actually used the term UX, and I was like, please translate. Can you tell us about that and what that looks like in your world?
Yeah, so I don't do anything with the design. So like the color, the pictures, those types of things I'm very removed from. What I focus on is the usability of a website. So let's say I asked you on a page, can you please tell me how to log out of this app? Can you tell me how to log in? Can you go find this specific shirt? The idea of what I do is to really take any business who's wanting to really hone in or refine their conversions, is to help them understand how they could improve that user experience, how their call to action could be more effective, how their funnel can be more efficient. So ultimately, your users are getting exactly what they need, going where they need to go in as short of a time as possible. So again, you kind of capture that prospect and can convert them to a client, paying client.
Paying clients are much more exciting than non-paying clients for most businesses, would you say?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to clarify.
Good call on that. All right, let's go to your inspiration figures. And the one that I have not heard of, actually there were two, Tracy Otsuka. Can you tell us about her for those of us who don't know?
Yeah, so she has a book and then also a podcast called ADHD for Smartass Women. So I have really struggled with that in my life, and it's helped me back in so many ways. And it's really delayed what I would call growth for me. And I'm just now, as I get older, kind of stepping into my own. But there are so many women who, and especially being a woman, it's not, you know, ADHD is typically associated with men. And so it really, A, gives you a place to go to just kind of be you, but also to say, oh my God, that explains everything. Mm-hmm. And if only I had really understood these pieces, my life could have been so different. So yeah, she's phenomenal, and just kind of unpacking in the past what I felt was just me being damaged or broken.
Awesome. Are there any specific stories of the past? And you mentioned the terminology, you know, that you've been held back or you've gone through difficulty that you maybe couldn't put words to. Is there anything specific you'd be willing to share? Like this one time, you know, this is what happened with that?
I mean, something very basic is just adulting. I mean, it sounds silly, but retention. I cannot retain a task. So being late to appointments, missing appointments, forgetting deadlines for clients. And while that sounds so basic, like, oh, just use a calendar. But quite literally, if I don't get it on that calendar that very second, so let's say I confirm an appointment, I get a phone call, so I don't have time to enter that appointment, it's forgotten, it's gone. And so to build out those processes, almost like you would in a business, in my personal life, to make sure that I have almost a pivot or an avenue for every possible kind of interruption, so I don't forget things. But it's also other things, like the milk ends up in the cabinet, the cereal box in the fridge. Focus is incredibly hard. So your boss comes to you and says, look, this project is due on Friday. And it's not that I can't do it. It's just, it feels so big and it feels so heavy. And it's not even a hard task. It's just, I didn't have the skills to break it down into smaller chunks to make it a realistic goal. And so just learning, I know it sounds so basic, but when your brain is just so different neurologically, some of the simple things can be really hard to master.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that specific with me. And so what's one or two of like the basic principles or steps or habits that, all right, look, if you start doing these things, it will help you start to manage this in a better, healthier way that maybe I didn't realize before hearing some of the concepts from Tracy. What are some of those practicals?
Well, I think the one that again, sounds so basic, but breaking things down into smaller steps. And because sometimes things can feel so big. Let's take a very simple example everyone can relate to, laundry. I can look at a laundry pile and be like, oh my God, I'm like literally like I'm overwhelmed. What do? I can't possibly wash this laundry and fold it, which is so ridiculous, right? But just breaking down steps. So finding something, a small task that I was able, that I knew I could accomplish. Like one example is like, I'm going to make dinner and I'm going to say every step along the way. I'm getting the spatula. I'm getting the pan. I'm putting the meat in the thing, in the skillet. But learning how to break down each step of a process through things that I already knew that I could do, I can cook tacos. So using that as a method to break it down into smaller steps, because then I could take that skill and apply it to much bigger projects. So at work, it's, you know, you need to build out this database. I need it by Friday. Here are all the specs. I wasn't overwhelmed by it once I really got those tools.
I dig it. By the way, first of all, when I look at a pile of laundry, it literally just completely debilitates me. So I can relate. Shout out to my wife who handles the vast majority in the household. And there is a crazy amount of laundry with, you know, 8 kids and 2 adults and dogs.
I can't imagine.
Yes.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, even what you're saying is what's a seemingly small or medium size process, if you're not aware and kind of implementing that, then it can be very overwhelming if you're not kind of in the moment and actively trying to attack that. Is that right?
That, and I think just stepping back from the problem, right? Like, because especially when something feels so big and so heavy, I've really learned how to just step back. And I play really silly examples in my head. So I'll be in my own Seinfeld sitcom. Damn. And so I try to take all these flaws that I see, because I can laugh at myself. I realize that a lot of things of what I do are ridiculous and stupid, and adults shouldn't have those problems. And I recognize the irony of so much of that. So I'm able to kind of turn it into a comedy in my head, step back from it, and kind of laugh at the hard things, because that allows me to process the hard things while still being easy on myself, like giving myself that grace, if that makes sense.
It does. Self-grace. So let's talk about that as far as the self-talk, because it seems like, for myself, I'll say, that's one of the toughest voices to overcome. And I've heard a lot of people speak on that fact of like that criticism in our minds, in our hearts, that we're just on ourselves so much more than, you know, one of our best friends or our people that love us. Can you speak to that? Is that an accurate thing for you as well?
Yeah. And actually one tip that I have for that is to give that a name, because in your sitcom, it's great to have that. So mine is Stooge. So nice. We have Summer and Stooge in my sitcom. But yeah, like you really kind of need to be able to give those negative thoughts or that piece of you that takes up so much of your headspace. I read recently that we have over 6,000 thoughts in a day, the average person. And of those 6,000 thoughts, an overwhelming majority are either negative or repetitive. And just let that sink in for a second. Like that is a massive waste of a very powerful tool that we have. And so I've spent a lot of time trying to say, okay, how can I outsmart my own brain when I have 70% of bad habits already built into that?
Yeah, I dig that. So do you cuss at Stooge sometimes?
Oh, Stooge and I go rounds. Yeah, for sure. It's like, do you remember the soup Nazi episode on Seinfeld?
Absolutely.
It's like the most epic.
Yes.
Yeah. So Stooge is at times I'm like the soup Nazi to Stooge, and at times Stooge is the soup Nazi to me.
I like it. That's very entertaining. And I find myself in very, very similar scenarios. And I think I'm a little goofy too, but I think we've got to be goofy. We've got to be willing to laugh at ourselves and be honest. And it makes it more manageable and enjoyable when we're doing it, right?
For sure. And I think the biggest piece of being able to turn it into a comedy for me isn't to downplay it. It's to be able to not be too hard on yourself, because a lot of times those negative thoughts or those flaws that we have are hard because I don't know how people feel, but I feel defeated. I feel stupid. It's like, oh, how could I possibly do something like that? And it's done. It's in the past. You can't go back and take it back. You just kind of have to own it and kind of laugh it off and again, build those tools to potentially be more efficient or less, you know, foolish in the future.
I like it. So I've got a friend, her name is Jessica RJ, and she owns a improv studio, or that's not the right word. What's the word? Improv theater in Austin, Texas. And I had her on my other podcast called The Phil Brothers Journey. But one of the concepts she's brought out is taking a failure bow. And so when you mess up, you just like, you know, almost like you cheer. It's like, yep, I just fell and I dropped that and it's a mess. And here I am, everybody, even though no one's there, you know, bravo, bravo. And you take a failure bow.
I love that. I love that. And that is so relevant. And I feel like that is kind of what you have to do. So that I actually have done a lot of improv, not in a professional capacity, but just in the classes, the drop-in classes you can take. So I would be very interested to checking hers out the next time I'm in Austin, Texas.
So the best part is you could actually join her on the virtual world, because that's how I met her originally. She's going to kill me for not knowing this and remembering it. I'm on the spot. The Hideout. And it is so fun, and there's so many cool games you can play Zoom. Obviously not the same as being in person, like most things, but with distance travel and the pandemic, it helps at least go in between, and it's a blast.
Can you tell me, Jessica, what was her last name, just so my Google returns the right result?
Yeah, RJ, and it's A-R-J-E-T, to which most people probably mispronounce.
RJ, I love it. All right.
Yes, so she's dandy. Definitely check it out. And if you ever go or start to join a class, hit me up on the old IG DM, because I would love to join in. It's a blast.
Sweet. Thank you for that.
Yes, ma'am. So as we begin to wrap up, first, I'd like to give a shout out to your top fans, mamas out there, most likely, hopefully listening, maybe. And then we got two homies. We got Z and Kat that might possibly listen as well. And so holler at them. You're famous. And anything you'd like to say to or about any of them?
You know, I think they know. I would hope that they know kind of the effect they've had on my life. But it's nice having those people that can keep you grounded. And I would say that the people in my life are very good about calling me out of my bullshit. Pardon my language.
No, I love it.
And it's hard to find that in a friend. A lot of times friends tell you what you need to hear. And sometimes I need that. And I can tell them I just need to hear what I need to hear. But most of the time, that's not what I want. I kind of want them to lay it on me how they see it.
Yeah.
So I can have other perspectives. And they're really great about that.
Nice. Good work out there, bullshit callers. We appreciate that. And that's what keeps us our best self. So word up on that. If people wanted to get in touch with you and or learn more about you or your startup advising and user experience and all that good stuff, how can people find you?
That's a great question. So probably just my email would be the simplest for now. So it's just sumtuck@gmail.com. And I'm happy to help with any resources they may need or just to point them in the right direction.
sumtuck@gmail.com. SUMTUCK.
That's me.
Cool. And all right, we've got our final question here, which is, and take a deep breath, don't overthink it. But if you had the ability to put a message on everybody's cell phones, let's say you get 1 billion messages, it's going to be up for a week, and it's going to be a message that's going to impact those people in a positive way. What's that message going to be from SumTuck? What are you going to recommend?
I am going to go with the biggest cliche on earth, but here's why. Because I don't know if everybody knows or if people know this backstory. So before I tell you what it is, I'm going to give you the backstory.
Okay.
And I might botch what country or emperor this was. So just roll with me. The general theme is there.
Yes.
So a Chinese emperor went to his three wise constituents, you know, up in the top of his leadership committee, whatever they're called,
yep.
And said, I need you to give me the one truth in life. If you had to tell me the one fundamental truth of life, what would it be? And if they couldn't tell him, the punishment was death for them, right? So they put their heads together. They're the greatest scholars in all of the region. And they put their heads together to come up with the one truth in life. And are you ready for it?
I'm ready.
This too shall pass.
This too shall pass. I like it. That word or that saying is written on my wall. So we have a like guest book wall. People walk in, take a Sharpie, write on the wall, sign your name. And then I encourage anyone to write like a saying or draw a doodle and then put the date. And my oldest stepdaughter put that, and it was in the midst of a trying time. So that is amazing. And I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, of course.
So here we go. Anything else that you'd like to throw out there for people that you think is important to talk about or say or hear?
I don't think so. I think we've covered the full gamut from Puerto Rican ghetto to potato platters to Auschwitz. I mean, there's not much left.
We've got a full spectrum. So in closing, you can say, tell your mama, tell your Z, tell your cat too, that you, Summer, are the star, and this show is for you.
Thank you for having me, Phil. I appreciate it.